Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is Michael Savage live here across America. I've been out a few days because of an illness, a mild illness, which I'll tell you about later on when I get to it. But I want to begin with a very important statement, and that is from Booker T. Washington. Many of you don't know who he is because he is so politically incorrect for the race hustlers that Booker T. Washington, one of the greatest blacks of the last century, is completely forgotten. Instead, we have the race hustlers who are constantly kept in our face. I'm going to read you something that he wrote. Now, Booker T. Washington founded Tuskegee University. He was an author. And he was a man who wrote this. He said, "There is another class of colored people who make a business of keeping the troubles, the wrongs, and the hardships of the Negro race before the public. Having learned that they are able to make a living out of their troubles, they have grown into the settled habit of advertising their wrongs, partly because they want sympathy and partly because it pays. Some of these people do not want the Negro to lose his grievances, because they do not want to lose their jobs." Close quote. Booker T. Washington, 1911. Go to clip two.
I have to confess that those are not statements that I ever heard when I was sitting in the pews at this church. Did I ever hear him make remarks that could be considered controversial while I sat in the church? Yes.
Yes. Play clip 10 now.
He's a Mac Daddy. He pimps white women and black women. Obama is a long-legged Mac Daddy. I haven't trashed Obama. His African in-heat father went a-whoring after a trashy white woman. He was born trash. I said he was born trash. I didn't trash him. I'm speaking the truth about him. Now, once again, I am a diplomat, but I'm not a compromiser. I got a word in my mouth. I said I got the word of God in my mouth, and God's not afraid of Obama or anybody else, or Ted Kennedy or that little Caroline or anybody else.
That's Reverend James D. Manning speaking out about Barack Obama. Reverend Manning is an interesting man. I haven't listened to all of his speeches. You can find them on michaelsavage.com or on YouTube right now, and it's going around the internet, going around talk radio for obvious reasons. And the obvious reasons are that not everybody sees Barack Obama as the second coming. But the most important thing today is the fact that Booker T. Washington saw people like Jesse Jackson, Barack Obama, and Al Sharpton for what they are. And the fact of the matter is, you say, well, how can you lump them together? Because they're exactly the same in a different flavor. And I'm going to read you what Booker T. Washington said back then. He said in 1911, when he saw what uneducated people were going to do with their demagoguery, he said, "There's another class of colored people who make a business of keeping the troubles, the wrongs, and the hardships of the Negro race before the public. Having learned that they're able to make a living out of their troubles, they have grown into the settled habit of advertising their wrongs, partly because they want sympathy and partly because it pays. Some of these people do not want the Negro to lose his grievances because they do not want to lose their jobs." Close quote. Founded Tuskegee University, Booker T. Washington, in his book, My Larger Education, Should Be Required Reading, topic number one. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. We have wonderful archival footage. We have anti-war footage, which I'm not going to play. The same old vermin in San Francisco, New York, and Boston who have nothing to do but chain themselves to things. I still don't understand why we just don't leave them chained. I mean, if they chain themselves to protest something to a federal building, why not leave them chained there? And as people go in and out of the building, just slam them in the head with the door. You know, let them go around and around in the with the door. Let people step on them and over them. And very soon they'll come to their senses, these anti-war protesters. And guess who they'll scream for help from? The police. The very police that they seem to hate so much is who they'll scream for. Or the U.S. Marines for that matter. I am so fed up with these anti-war scum. I don't know about you, but they're not helping anybody. And one drop of blood of a U.S. Marine is not worth 10 gallons of their blood, as far as I'm concerned. As far as the Bush bear bailout, I was off the air. Today is Wednesday. It's been a blur for me. I was in the hospital on Sunday. I've not been in the hospital since I've been a kid. I have a slight case of pneumonia, okay? How I got it, don't know. Fatigue, probably eating at too many local restaurants that I shouldn't have eaten in, of a certain persuasion. But nevertheless, even I, you know, after many a summer dies the swan, well, after many a summer, even the best of us get sick. I'm a pretty strong guy, and I've practiced a lot of good health practices, but I got fluid on my lungs, and so I'm only going to do a bit of a show today, and I'll try again tomorrow for another piece until such time as I might be able to do a whole show again. I'm going to do what I can. Doctor said don't work for a couple of weeks, maybe a month, but as I can't sit still. I can't lay in bed. I've been moving things, carrying things, lifting things. In fact, I'm at a brand new studio. For security reasons, I had to shift the studio, which I'm not going to talk about where it is or how it is or why it is, but it's directly related to the legal case that I'm involved in as far as I'm concerned. But I'm in a new secure facility, which no one knows exists except for the engineer who created it and the people who work. So that's the world I live in. I really love it. And I thank God for giving me the opportunity to speak the truth to power here on the Savage Nation. And speaking about truth to power, I want to talk about the bailout of the Bear Stearns bailout the other day by George Bush and the Treasury Secretary. This is the biggest theft in history, according to very seasoned Wall Street operatives. It's the greatest theft in history. What you saw, let's say you watched The Sopranos. I'm going to take a popular example. And you saw an example of a criminal named Tony Soprano in New Jersey getting a local guy to gamble who owned a big sporting goods store, getting him on the VIG, the Vigorish, and then slowly but surely taking down the store for everything it's worth until eventually the store was bankrupt and the guy wound up homeless. That's exactly what was just done using taxpayer money. They busted out Bear Stearns. Now, what's strange here is how they've gotten away with it. The bailout people, that is Mr. Paulson of the Treasury Department, who was behind it all. And remember, and don't forget, keep your eye on the ball. Mr. Paulson, who runs our Treasury Department, the bald guy, the tall guy who gave the speech in a hesitating way the other day, sounded like the aw shucks kind of hesitant guy. He's the architect of this. He's the former CEO of Goldman Sachs. So now why would he take taxpayer money and bail out a competitor who was this? See, first you got to ask is how the competitor got run into the ground. How did Bear Stearns get run off the road? Number one, how did Bear Stearns get run off the road? Number one. Number two, how does the government bail out a company for $250 million, giving it to a competitor when the building alone is worth $1 billion? And number three, we wake up today and find out that Goldman Sachs and Lehman Brothers are going to borrow from the same U.S. taxpayer fund that was set up to save Bear Stearns. Ladies and gentlemen, it's just like the, in my opinion, it's identical to the bust out of the sporting goods store in The Sopranos. And in this case, the bust out was of a major American bank by the operatives inside our own government. The reason they can get away with it is they are the government. They got the army, they got the police, and they have all of the police services. We are the powerless fools who pay for it. I've never in my life ever seen thievery of this nature in my life. Never. It wouldn't have even been tried in past generations. Nobody would have had the thought to do it. Anyone who had that kind of gangsterism in them never would have been made a Treasury Secretary, for example, in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. But something has happened to America since Bill Clinton became president. And now, of course, 15 years later, it's Clinton Bush. There is a gangsterism that runs through corporate America that is matched only by the gangsterism that runs through the government. Why? Because they're one and the same. They leave corporate America to go to work for the government, and they go back from the government to the corporate America. That's why we're losing our country. Don't you understand that? We have pirates running everything. So if you want to see what this is all about, go see the stories. The Bush Bear bailout, the biggest theft in history, and Goldman Sachs and Lehman are about to borrow from U.S. taxpayer fund set up to save Bear Stearns. I linked them up from other places on michaelsavage.com. There's another wonderful article by John Lilpop on my site, which says California should celebrate March 31st as Dr. Michael Savage Day. It's a great article. I didn't know he had written it. I guess he wrote it as a get well gift to me. Maybe he knew I was sick. I don't really know. But it's really well written. Maybe I'll get to it later. Investment banks are borrowing from Fed. New York Reuters. Investment banks Goldman Sachs Group, Lehman Brothers Holdings, Inc., and Morgan Stanley are testing a new program that allows investment banks to borrow directly from the Federal Reserve, according to people at the banks. This was never done before. Do you have any idea this has never been done? It was not even done after the Great Depression. Do you know that the last time we had a bank that was on the verge of failure during the Great Depression, FDR, who was a very left-wing president, some would say a socialist, some would say our first socialist president, even FDR did not bail out that bank. He closed the banks on a bank holiday. But in our generation, because you're so stupid, because you're so narcissistic, because all the young people want are orgasms and telephones, the gangsters can get away with war, murder, and thievery on the highest level. So consequently, they do things that have never been done in history before. They get away with it, and no one says anything because the media is filled with dolts, uneducated dolts without any historical knowledge. And I am left alone here, literally alone, like Atlas carrying the world on my shoulder. I'm telling you how I see it. For however long I do radio, I'm telling you that's exactly the way it is. You've never had a nation run by gangsters as you have now. It's a nation run by pirates and gangsters. How else do you explain a Treasury secretary engineering the bust out of a company who was a competitor to his former company, and then his former company 2 days later dipping into the same reserve fund set up to bail out the busted out company that was driven off the highway? Do you have any idea that I know what I'm talking about? Are you people that ignorant of what's going on underneath your own nose? And by the way, where do you think the billions of missing dollars in Iraq have gone? We heard about airplanes full of greenbacks going in and out of Iraq for 5 years, and the money went missing. Where has it gone? You think all of it was stolen by our Iraqi friends? Do you think so? You don't think some of it came right back here or went into the Cayman Islands? The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. Michael Savage, The Savage Nation, michaelsavage.com, the website. Booker T. Washington was the quote, and I will quote it a few other times. But I want to play one piece before I take the break, and that's Reverend James D. Manning speaking out against Barack Obama in clip 14. It's a shocking piece. Just listen to it.
I'm here to speak the word of God. I don't have to compromise with you. You've been in this country a slave for 500 years, and you're still marching and complaining that you don't have anything. After 500 years. There must be something deficient about your intellectual strength. There must be something deficient about your God to let you be on the bottom as long as you're on the bottom. And 2 years from now, Mexicans are going to be running your life and writing your paycheck. If I don't stand up, I'm your last hope. After me, there'll be no hope. Farrakhan didn't get it for you. Barack is an emissary of the devil.
Okay, you heard it from another preacher, not from Michael Savage. I'll be right back.
Savage.
As imperfect as he may be, he has been like family to me. He strengthened my faith, officiated my wedding, and baptized my children.
Okay, not there once. It is. Look, he's made his choice. He's chosen his church. Now he has to live with the consequences. But for 20 years, he never heard anything derogatory about whites or derogatory about the country that has given him so many blessings. Either he has selective hearing or he's lying to us. In either case, he's not qualified for the presidency. Now, why do I say that? Well, I'll give you a few examples, all you left-wing racists. Here's a couple. Just a few. A couple of years ago, there was a man named Trent Lott. I'm not a big fan of Trent Lott because he tried to do in talk radio. I never liked Trent Lott's politics. I always thought he was just another big politician. But nevertheless, Trent Lott lost his speakership because of his association, just his association with a gentleman. who was far less inflammatory than this one. That's number one. And if you remember, there was another man who lost his position because he went to a golfing thing at Bob Jones University. I don't remember. Who's that politician, Beowulf? Remember the Bob Jones controversy a couple of years ago? No, it wasn't Bush. It was someone else. Anyway, anytime a conservative, a Republican, I should say, pardon me for mixing the two up, gets anywhere near anything controversial, the left wing goes insane, screams racism, and they wind up losing a position. So now we have 20 years of incendiary racist comments by Reverend Wright, in which Obama has sat idly by listening to, which I think surely qualifies him to not be the president of the United States. The other topic is the bailout. The Bush Bear bailout is the biggest theft in history, according to not only me, but people on Wall Street who are being shut up. Matt on KNEW, welcome to the program. Your opinion. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I'm a commercial banker, and I've been following this whole situation for years, and it is just it's absolutely appalling that they've let it get to this point, but it's all a big scam. They're trying to bail this money. They're trying to bail out this situation with taxpayer money, and it's just putting their thumb right down on the homeowner.
Wait a minute. First of all, it's unprecedented, incidentally. As I said before, FDR didn't bail out a bank when it went under. They called a bank holiday, but they set up a fund to bail out Bear Stearns. Then we learned 2 days later Goldman Sachs and Lehman are going to dip into the same fund. How does that work, Matt? That's criminality as far as I'm concerned.
Well, you know, it's all incestuous. I mean, you know, they borrow the money from themselves. They loan.
But, Matt, there are names attached to this. There's no they. I'm going to name names again. Secretary of the Treasury Paulson. His former job was CEO of Goldman Sachs. Doesn't anybody else know this?
Well, I mean, but more than that, I mean, where are they getting the cash to fund this bailout? They're borrowing it. Who are they borrowing it from? The Chinese are sitting on over $1 trillion in hard currency assets right now.
Matt, what percent of our T-bills are held by the Chinese? Do you happen to know what percent?
We went through and figured out what was going on with the money supply. Listen to this. 60% of the U.S. currency is not held in U.S. hands. Of the 40% remaining amount of currency, 90% of it is held by the top 5% of asset holders in this country. The rest.
Hold on. Unbelievable. So we're owned lock, stock, and barrel by foreign powers.
Savage.
Was not a black boy raised in a single-parent home. Barack was. Barack knows what it means to be a black man living in a country and a culture that is controlled by rich white people. Hillary can never know that. Hillary ain't never been called a...
No comment. Now, you're telling me you sit in a church with a pastor that's this inflammatory and racist and you don't know where he's coming from. And then when you finally found out, you say that he's like family. He's like a crazy uncle, an uncle you love who says things you don't like. That's malarkey. They must be listening to the Savage Nation as handlers because I've used the uncle remark about myself. But remember, and remember carefully, I'm not a preacher. I'm not a reverend. You're not in my church. I'm on a radio station. You're not sitting in a church, you're not necessarily abiding by my philosophy. Maybe some yes, some no. Some you agree with, some you don't agree with. But I don't hold myself up as a leader. I don't hold myself up as a church leader. I don't hold myself up as a man of God. I didn't baptize your daughters. I didn't marry you. That's a huge differential, it is, between a preacher whose house of God you go to and a radio station you tune into. And so, no, you can't use that phony excuse. It's not going to fly, Obama. Frankly, my gut opinion, he's finished. Now, who leaked this? Where'd they get the sound bites from? First of all, no one manufactured the sound bites. This is the first chink in the armor of Barack Obama. There have been other attempts, but nobody would get near him. He was Teflon. He was the Teflon candidate until now. The reason his armor has been pierced are as manyfold, but you have to ask yourself, why did this come up all of a sudden, and who got it? Well, my guess is it's the opposition research team of Hillary Clinton, if anybody really wants to study this. They're very smart. They're very good at digging up dirt on their enemies. And they searched, and they searched far and wide. She doesn't have to say a word or lift a finger. The damage has been done. His ratings have plummeted, and hers have gone up. And so they really did what they wanted to do, which is find a weakness, and they did so. That's who I think did it. Now, I think personally Obama can never recover from this. That's my personal opinion. And I think this is only the first salvo out of 16-inch guns from the Hillary camp. Remember, there's a gigantic corruption trial going on in Chicago right now. The media won't report on it, but it's directly tied to this politician, and they won't talk about it. So there's the story. That's the situation we have. And then the bank situation. I was stunned Monday morning when I woke up. I'd been in the hospital Sunday. I was a little delirious Monday morning. But to wake up and see the government acting in an unprecedented fashion, the bailout Bear Stearns. But you want to hear something really odd? Was there anyone else in radio who for the last 3 weeks has been using the phrase Bear Stearns? Don't you remember what I've been saying to you for a month? I said sarcastically, well, facetiously, excuse me. It's another word. Look it up. Sarcasm, satire, facetiousness. I know they're all lost on the illiterates, but facetiously I said on this show the following. I said we should cease holding elections in America, and we should just permit Goldman Sachs and Bear Stearns to determine who the next president should be, since they determine it anyway. Don't you remember I said that to you 3 weeks ago? I can guarantee you that before I said it, the investment bank Bear Stearns was known only within banking circles. It was not known in the general public. So here I was using the word Bear Stearns. I was using the Goldman Sachs in a facetious manner because I noticed something as an interchangeable movement from CEO of Goldman Sachs into the Treasury Department. Now, if all was going well in America, I'd say, well, who else should be running the Treasury Department but a billionaire who knows how everything works? I said, all right, so who do you want, a street guy who doesn't know anything? No, but it isn't working well. Our currency is devalued, and I know a lot of people with significant money. They didn't know what to do with their money Monday morning. They didn't know where to go with it. They were going to try to run into T-bills. T-bills were paying less than 1%. Do you know that? 0.75% interest. Have you ever heard of anything like this? That's because so much money was pouring into T-bills. I called people who know money. I used my own resource. I didn't know a lot of people with money, but I know a few that I really trust. And they all said the same thing. They said, I don't know. They don't know what to do with the money. I even called my friend in the gold business. And to be honest, I put money into gold, some more money into gold. I've not been wrong on gold yet in all the years I've been on radio. Swiss America's backed me, and I've backed them. And thank God the investments work. But this is not a pitch for Swiss America. This is a pitch for the fact that we have an out-of-control government. I would call this government anarchy. We have a government anarchy with no controls over them. They are busting out our economy, if they haven't already done so, and helping themselves to as much fat out of the Treasury as they dare get. The war wasn't enough for them. The fat in the war materiel business was not enough for them. After all, never before in America's military history, so far as I know, have there not been guys who cooked for the guys in the military. After all, they had different jobs in the military. And there were cooks. People worked in the infirmary. Not anymore. Under GWB and company, nobody cooked in the military. It was factored out to a friend of the family. And each meal on a tray to our troops cost you $8. And if a soldier went back for another hot dog and potato chips for another tray, you get billed another $8 from KKR, a subsidiary of your good friends in the vice president's office, according to some who study this. And so how did this happen? That was going on, but that wasn't enough for them. Now they had to go to the next step. They had to bust out a competitive bank on Wall Street, bring in a taxpayer money, listen to this, they bust out Bear Stearns. God knows what they did to do that to them. They busted them out, and then at the last minute after busting them out, they sell it off to one of their friends for $250 million when the building that they're in, Bear Stearns, is worth $1 billion. The next day, the stock of that company, Bear Stearns, goes back up again. Goes back up again, and that's not the end of it. We learned that Goldman Sachs and Lehman Brothers, the two surviving big banks, private banks, are going to be dipping into that taxpayer money as well in a bailout. Now, this is interesting when you think about the twists of fate and how the Republicans are the biggest band of crooks the country has ever seen. The biggest thieves we've ever seen, bigger than the Democrats, and I'll tell you why. I know you think this is blasphemy, but I could care less what you think. I'll tell you what I think and why. For years, the litany of the right wing has been welfare is bad. Individual responsibility is good. Don't give the bums money for doing nothing. I said, well, that's true. Look at the bums. Make them work. Make them, you know, if they're able-bodied, you know, we certainly help the blind and the deaf if they need it and the crippled, but we don't need to help able-bodied drug addicts. We've all said that. And that, you know, resonated with the conservative right wing. It certainly did. And we didn't believe in bailouts. We didn't believe in government bailouts of the poor. We wake up and the government is bailing out the super rich, not the rich, but the super rich, the uber rich, the uber rich, the uber rich. I named them Gulfstream liberals 10 years ago before anybody else. I don't care who ripped it off, but I did. Way past the limousine liberal, I called them Gulfstream liberals because I was jealous. I wanted a G5. At that time, it was a G3. I wanted a G3, but I named them Gulfstream liberals. But these gunuffs, these gangsters, are not happy with one Gulfstream, not happy with three Gulfstreams, not happy with a Gulfstream for their prostitute, not happy with a Gulfstream for their three prostitutes. They also want a 737 for themselves to keep up with the Joneses, so to speak. It's a very sad time to be an American, I got to tell you, because you look on the other side, you don't know which way to turn. So there it is. We got the bailout on Wall Street. We got the blowout in the presidential race because of the candidacies of these milquetoasts like McCain. I noticed he went to the Wailing Wall with Lieberman leading the delegation. I thought that was very cute. Very, very cute. They all do the Wailing Wall visit. All right. You know, it's a standard thing. It's like the seven stations of the cross redo. And one of the stations of the cross for a candidate on the Republican side has to be the Wailing Wall. I'm rather cynical about it. And I could just imagine the conversation with Joey Lieberman on the airplane going into Ben-Gurion Airport with John McCain. I woke up laughing, actually, in bed in the middle of my fever. I've been having some good times with my fevers. I've had some good visions and some good jokes to myself, albeit my wind is not as good as it should be. And how long I'll go today, I don't know. I'm going to try an hour and a half. But I had an imaginary conversation between Joey Lieberman and who I affectionately call Senator Lieberman, and John McCain. And it was something along the lines of, and I mock his voice in a way that it really isn't. I actually like Lieberman. I think he's a good senator. But I don't even think I can go into a comedic role. I'm sorry. I had the guys laughing before. I can't switch gears. It wouldn't be funny anymore. You imagine it better. It'll be better than this. All right, so we're talking about Obama. We're talking about the preachers. We're talking about this. We're talking about the bailout. And if you listen to me carefully, you'll find out that I'm offended by many things. And they really don't fall along party lines, incidentally. You know, you got people calling themselves, everyone's an independent now in radio. Then they run back to CNN studios and interview each other from CNN. They're all independent. Everyone's an independent. 10 minutes later, they're interviewing Geraldo Rivera. That was a scream. Bill O'Reilly interviews Geraldo Rivera today. I couldn't believe this. So what? Geraldo Rivera suddenly got the emphasis on race now. This jackass, Geraldo Rivera, is suddenly an expert on race relations? A man who gave away troop movements? And there's Bill O'Reilly kissing up to Geraldo Rivera and asking him, oh, man, what do you think about race? Because you're Hispanic, aren't you, Jerry Rivers? You know, this is sickening. How do you people put up with this? I ask myself. Let's go to the lady that was been waiting for a while. Paula in Sacramento on KSTE. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Michael Savage.
Hello.
I want to tell you that before I became the 60-year-old quiet baby boomer that I am today, I was a black militant, a very militant college student in the 60s. And I wanted.
All right. Well, hold on. First of all, you're not alone. And it's a normal progression for an intelligent person, by the way.
Tell you a story that will give you some insight about this Barack situation. But I will tell you that something that you may not understand. The black community, the black church today is the gathering point for the black community, just as the university was a gathering place for militant students of the 60s, anti-war, flower children, the whole ball of wax. And, mm-hmm. and just as the streets serve the same purpose for the young people in the 60s who were not in college. People mm-hmm. were everywhere. There was nowhere else to be if you wanted to know what was going on. And when you put mm-hmm. yourself in those communities, and it's a massive group of people, and nobody, you know, there are a lot of voices and a lot of people who think they're running the show, you get caught in a crossfire. And I want to tell you about the crossfire.
Well, what do you think of Obama? As a former black radical, what do you think of Obama?
You know, Obama, to me, I see him as being very much in the position today that I was in then. I was in this crossfire between serious, militant people who had were nationally known, and they were meeting in my house in Los Angeles when I was a college student at UCLA. And
but wait, were you on the level, on the arc of radicalism? Were you with the Angela Davis crowd?
You know, I actually, this is ironic you would mention her, because my situation was so immediate that the FBI called me at my job one day in those times when they were looking for her, because they thought that I knew where she was. Because
well, here's a woman who helped engineer the execution of a judge in Marin County in the 70s when she freed black revolutionaries, I should say, who taped a gun to a judge's head and blew his head off here in Marin County. She's now a tenured professor at the University of California, the last I checked, Santa Cruz, to give you some idea. But you were there? I mean, were you involved in that kind of revolution?
The way that I knew Angela Davis, I knew of her. Her roommate was a friend of mine who I used to give rides home from UCLA. And we, you know, in the black students of those days in the 60s, we all had these African names and afros. You may remember the big afros. We all had African names, and just by sheer coincidence, my African name was the same name that Angela Davis was using. So there was confusion because we both, what we...
I understand, but Paula, you still haven't answered a simple question, which is, and it's an important one to me, as a former black revolutionary who's now sedate, I would assume by what you're saying to me, you basically could care less about it all, would you vote for Obama?
I would, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. My politics are that right now that I think America needs someone who's really smart in the tradition of a FDR, who could walk in a room and negotiate with people who he hated and hated and people that hated his guts. Or, you know, I look at...
Well, okay, so you're talking about a strong leader. Which of the three could do that?
From another planet. I look at the Churchill, Roosevelt, Stalin.
I don't know if you heard me, but which of the three, McCain, Clinton, or Barack Obama, which of the three do you think comes closest?
I honestly, if McCain weren't trying to keep us in Iraq, I would go with McCain. But
interesting. That's from a former black revolutionary. Well, here's the last question, Paula. I hear in your voice a serious person who's also... certainly different than me politically, as I would imagine, and yet you listen to this show. Why do you listen to this show if I'm so different than you?
I listen to you constantly. Frankly, I'm amused with your take on the liberal position in America. Maybe we are a little crazy. I still think I'm pretty...
Okay. So you see, you're the only one who isn't crazy. Anyone who could take levity and someone who calls them crazy and not get mad is actually not crazy. That's funny.
You as my free psychiatrist for being
oh God, you're telling me you don't agree with anything I say politically?
Well, you know, I'm not I don't see myself ever floating into a Republican camp, but I guess I'm
wait a minute, hold on, I'm not in the Republican camp. What have you seen me in a Republican camp?
I guess I see myself more.
Paula, let me tell you something, my dear friend. You and I would both not be welcome at a Republican fundraiser. Do you know that, Paula?
Okay.
Are you recognizing the fact that you and I would be left out in the servants' quarters at any country club that they would attend? I don't think you understand that, Paula. They want nothing to do with me, Paula. Please don't ever insult me. You could call me anything you want except one thing, Paula. Don't ever call me a Republican.
Okay, I promise.
You can leave that to the golfer and the wall banger and the leprechaun, Paula.
You know, this whole thing, I see Barack Obama in that black church setting.
All right, hold on. I'm going to come back to Paula and other good folks here in the Savage Nation. because I've come out of a fever and I have a fever to talk with you. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I am the voice crying in the wilderness of planet Earth to the black faces. Return and repent, saith the Lord.
Well, we're going to get more Reverend James Manning, who was not a big fan of Barack Obama. In fact, he says things that are quite shocking to someone who's not in those circles. It's unbelievable to me that we just heard of him now. But I told you, if you listen to the show over the years, that I've always been attracted to preachers of this type. I don't mean the Manning type. Look, let me go backwards. You remember I told you about Brother Billy who took me up to a storefront church in Harlem when I was very young? I was down around Times Square. I don't remember how I met him. But I was always caught up in the people who were emotional, exciting, electrifying, speaking their minds. And I had an old Volkswagen at the time, and there was this white preacher, Brother Billy, I don't know, on a soapbox, whatever. And I was looking for the truth everywhere, which to turn in every doorway. I didn't know. I eventually found it with my own people, which is the way it works. Because you can find truth anywhere, but ultimately you have to find truth with your own people. That's how it really works. Which goes back to, before I get distracted with this long story about the black church, to show you how wonderful God, to tell you the truth, if you were a black person, you'd have to find your faith the same way that most black people do, which is with black preachers. This is the way it works. But whether it has to be Afro-Leninist is the question, and make no mistake about it, Obama's preacher is an Afro-Marxist, Afro-Leninist, whichever way you want to put it. He's an Afro-centrist and an Afro-separatist, if not an Afro-supremacist. You apply the proper phraseology to this situation, it definitely disqualifies Obama from leading an entire nation, because I'm not ready to be dragged into no Afro-Marxism.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
And players, black men, that's who they are. And black women are player lovers. That's why you go to the churches that you go to. You're player lovers. Rather than people of integrity, people of honor, you are the weakest people on the planet. And you have the audacity to accept affirmative action, which says that you are not as qualified as someone else, and you made it a law. You have accepted affirmative action and grinned and held parties to celebrate when the white man says, we'll make a law similar to the Dred Scott decision that says that you are not as qualified as others because of racism and slavery. Therefore, what is required of the white race is not required of you. And you have applauded affirmative
action.
Well,
this is Reverend James Manning, who is the opposite of Barack Obama's preacher, but equally incendiary. Welcome to the Savage Nation. A lot of this is coming out now. You know, what's amazing to me, if you just want to take an eagle's view of the whole thing, float above it all. Here was a campaign that was milquetoast. They were talking about nothing. They all were getting away with talking about nothing. Nobody really talked about the real issues facing America and Americans today. They were lying about it all. and dancing around it and talking about themselves, and the media was in cahoots with them. All the media was talking about is who raised more money, as though it was a horse race about money raising instead of saving America from the gangsters who are ripping us off, for example, with the bailout of Bear Stearns. By the way, have you heard a word from Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton or John McCain about the Bear Stearns bailout, which is unprecedented in American history? Wouldn't you think that's something that a press corps would be hounding them with? Saying to them, what do you think about this unprecedented bailout of a bank? Even FDR didn't do it during the Depression. What do you think about that, Mr. Obama, Mrs. Clinton, and Mr. McCain? I haven't heard one word. We're living like alternate universes here. But what's interesting to me, sitting up here on a mountaintop looking down and listening to all of this, because I've been out of the loop for a few days, almost in a delirium. I told you I was in the hospital. I'm not making a big deal of it, but I never go to the hospital. I hate hospitals. I hate doctors. I mean, we need them. God bless them. They're wonderful people. But you have to be your own doctor most of your life if you hope to survive into old age. And then you have to rely upon doctors when you need them with, again, your own counsel along the way. Don't ever take a doctor's opinion as gospel. Use common sense and use several opinions before you do anything. That's all I can warn you. So anyway, to make a long story short, I had a lot of fever and this and that. I'm looking down upon it. So here's a man, Barack Obama, who's playing as silky, smooth, nice guy as you can get. All of a sudden, the opposition research team of Hillary Clinton finds these tapes of his preacher and the rest. Boom, the armor is pierced. The jousting pole went right through the guy's suit of armor. And now the guy's bleeding politically. And the real man has had to lift up the mask. And he's starting to do all sorts of cover-up and this and that. I heard him, didn't hear him, I still love him. He was an uncle. That didn't work. He's like an uncle you love but you don't believe. Then that didn't work. All of a sudden, I was there for 20 years, I didn't hear a word. And that isn't working. So now they got him on the, and Hillary, interesting. But all of a sudden, race is back into the mix. What I'm getting at, here's a man who said that he was not racist. He didn't want to talk about race. He didn't want divisiveness. He's now brought up a nightmare into the American political arena, or shall I say the American political jungle. There was no race in this campaign until now. And then we find out by scratching the surface, by touching the veneer, by scraping away the stucco of Barack Hussein Obama, right underneath the stucco of the nice vanilla guy, there may be some other face. And it may not be the face that you think it is. When you listen to the inner zeitgeist of this preacher, it's Afro-Marxism, Afrocentrist, it's white hatred of the lowest order. It's identical, really, to Louis Farrakhan. You don't have to go any further than that. So it turns out that Barack Obama basically has been going to a church that preaches the same things that Louis Farrakhan's Nation of Islam has been preaching, to a large extent without the Islamic connotation. Instead of it being within the context of Islam, it's in the context of black revolutionaries, a black revolution within the context of Christianity, although the Christianity part of it is on a minor note. And so now race is very much back into the mix again, for better or for worse. So that's how I see it. It's one man's opinion. And if you say, well, I'm picking on because he's black, well, if that's the way you see it, I can't help you. I can't deal with that. I'm telling you like it really is. You know I'm right. You know I'm right, and basically Obama's finished. Because this is just the beginning of the end. It's not the end of the beginning. I can guarantee you the opposition research team from the Clintons who dug this up are going to come up now with the trial in Chicago. You wait and see what comes up. What? Watch. Month by month, the veneer is going to be disappeared. Now I'm also talking about the Bear Stearns bailout, the biggest theft in American history. That is a quote from an article that I found over the weekend. Sunday afternoon, I think. It was Monday when I came out of the bed. And a broker, one of the major brokerage houses, someone, I don't know the guy's name. They quoted him, and I didn't get his name. I didn't have the time. But the guy says this is the biggest theft in American history. So I look into it. I said, you know, the guy may be right. Why is he calling the bailout of Bear Stearns one of the biggest thefts in history? I've likened it to the bust out of the sporting goods store in The Sopranos. Only instead of it being a sporting goods store in this case, it's an investment bank was busted out by the other investment bank. You got to understand, they're not friends. Goldman Sachs is a competitor of Bear Stearns. So who do you think was behind the demise of Bear Stearns? Who do you think called their notes? Who do you think
made them go under before they went under? Who did that to them? Well, you can name anyone you want. I don't really know. I'm not involved in those circles. But I can guarantee you their competitors were involved. Now, it just so happens that one of their competitors has a former CEO who's Treasury Secretary who comes up with a new system which says we're going to take taxpayer money, meaning they're going to print money, or they're going to take it out of the Federal Reserve, which is even worse, by the way, if you can imagine that, and they're going to give it to the boys on Wall Street to do as they wish with. Monopoly money, not just for the Bear Stearns boys, but presto magico for the people at Goldman Sachs and Lehman Brothers. And the next day, the guys at Goldman Sachs and Lehman Brothers say, like the wolves in the story, in the fable, yes, we think we'll take a little bit of that money, too. We'll use it to make sure we don't get into any further, any trouble at all. Not that we're in trouble, but yes, we'll take a little bit, too, because our daughter's G5 needs new engines. And since our daughter's maid's G4 just had an engine overhaul at government expense, our daughter's maid's maid's G3 may need new engines next May. So, yes, we'll help ourselves to some of that money. WOR Rob, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, you know, you could stop talking politics and start talking finance for 3 or 4 weeks and never even touch the surface of some of these issues. I just wanted to share a perspective with you. I hope that there are some ambitious U.S. attorneys out there who are listening to your show. I have a friend who was let go from a middle-level position at Merrill Lynch. I think they cut about 15,000-20,000 people at the beginning of the year. Here in New York, you know, thousands and thousands of middle-level jobs are being cut across all of these financial firms.
Right.
And what he said to me was very interesting. He's a guy who does what they call financial modeling. I don't really understand it, but essentially he's looking at...
Rob, before you go on, I see on my screen that you're calling from New York and you're a securities lawyer. Is that correct?
I am. I happen to represent smaller, you know, niche players, not the big boys, so I can't speak directly to some of the...
Oh, well, you've got your hands cut. You've got your business cut out for the next few years because in the settlement with Bear Stearns, I understand they've set aside quite a few hundred million for lawsuits.
We're just waiting for the lawsuits to roll in, which is, you know...
hey, look, everyone got to make a living. But let me... before you go on, Bear Stearns has a chief executive named Jimmy Kane. Before the bust out, he was worth $1 billion, as near as last year when the firm stock was $170. How much is Jimmy Kane worth today?
You can tell better than I can. I mean, if all of his net worth is tied up in Bear Stearns, not very much, and he deserves it. But that actually leads right into my point, Mike. And here's the thing. So I have this friend, middle-level manager, guy working his way up, you know, mid-30s, making an honest living. He told me that 16 months ago, he was reviewing these mortgage-backed securities deals, and he basically said to his superiors, this is ridiculous. We don't have the numbers to support, these securities. In other words, that what's underlying all this is the same thing that's causing the imploding mortgage market, which is too many Americans taking on mortgages they can't handle, that they don't understand. You know, whether you consider predatory or an uninformed public, you know, is another matter altogether. But the fact is that all these mortgages that were aggregated and then packaged and sold and resold to all these, you know, very sophisticated type of securities, they had no underlying solid foundation. And so...
Well, wait a minute. But that goes to the root of the whole problem, Rob. Our dollar has no underlying root of foundation. When we were taken off the gold... When will we put on the gold standard, Rob? Educate the American people. When was the dollar tied to gold? Do you remember? Have you studied this?
Mike, I think it was probably, you know, sometime, I know it was sometime this century when we were taking off the gold standard.
Well, Rob, this is interesting. You know, I've said for years I'm not an expert in the economics, but let me tell you something. I may be as expert as the next guy. I studied the panic of 1871 over the weekend, and I suggest that anyone educated in this world of finance should go back to the panic of 1871 to understand what happened to our currency then. And I'm going to spend a minute on it. Rob, 1871, a private investment bank named Cook in Philadelphia goes bankrupt. It unravels the entire housing market. The stock market is closed. People are laid off. There are riots in America. The army is called out. Americans are shot by the U.S. military who are rioting because they were laid off. That's happened in the panic of 1871, Rob. So, you know, this is nothing new. The only thing new is that we don't call it a panic or a depression anymore. We call it a downturn. But make no mistake about it, what the government did the other day, meaning what Paulson did the other day, is illegal. It's an unprecedented move. I've never read of this. 1871, no. 1929 crash, no. Nobody bailed out a bank before with taxpayer funds that I know of, Rob. Correct me if I'm mistaken.
I was a kid back then, but I do remember the SNL crisis back in the 80s, and I don't know that banks were necessarily bailed out, but there was a restoration fund for citizens that had been harmed. But here's the real thing, Mike. There's two points I wanted to make. One is that...
Well, I was a kid in 1871 myself, Rob, so I remember it quite clearly. I was wearing knickers and rolling hoops down Ludlow Street when this occurred. Go on, please.
Well, you should see Ludlow Street today, but Mike...
I'm joking.
The guys, most of whom have left the Citigroups and the Bear Stearns and the Merrills, the people who were involved in actually putting these CMOs, CDOs, and mortgage-backed securities together knew a year ago, maybe longer, maybe even from the beginning, from their experience, that they didn't have the sufficient underpinnings to sustain those.
Rob, they are false fiduciary instruments built upon a house of sand. We understand they were trading monopoly money. They were phony bonds, in essence. But they were trading amongst each other until eventually something had to happen, and it did. That I knew was going to come. But I never thought the government would step in with taxpayer money and say, okay, guys, we're gonna bail you out. How do they sell off Bear Stearns for $250 million when the building is alleged to be worth $1 billion? Can you explain that, Rob?
Well, I can't explain it, but what I can explain is that there was actually something on the news this afternoon. You probably don't have a chance to catch it because of your show. There's a big fight going on behind the scenes between bondholders and stockholders are trying to drive the stock of the price of the stock back up so that they'll get a more realistic value for it. I'm not so sure this J.P. Morgan thing is a done deal.
Well, wait, J.P. Morgan. Oh, right. No, I understand there's going to be an opposition to the takeover of Bear Stearns by J.P. Morgan. But according to CNBC, J.P. Morgan expected to lay off more than half of the company's 14,000 employees. The people who got hurt the worst by this, by the way, were the employees in Bear Stearns. The fire sale of Bear Stearns has hit the firm's 14,000 employees, as well as the firm's many thousands of shareholders whose stakes have gone up in smoke. They went bankrupt. And in 1929, when that happened, people jumped out of skyscrapers. Why are they not jumping out of skyscrapers today, the guys who did it to us? Answer, because they're the government themselves.
I think that the people who were involved in these, like you said, their lack of fiduciary duties resulted in these losses. They need to be prosecuted, and that's unprecedented.
Well, is there a U.S. attorney who is independent enough to do this, do you think, Rob? Will the FBI look into this?
I got to be honest with you. I wish Elliot Spitzer was still the U.S. attorney and not the former.
Oh, don't bring that one up. Yeah, this would be a ripe day for Elliot Spitzer if only the hooker thing didn't come up. The New Yorkers didn't know how the good they had it with him with only a couple of hookers compared to what they got now with Patterson.
Yep, you got that right.
But yeah, but wait a minute. When I heard that the lackey of Spitzer was going to be made the governor, didn't I say there should be a special election in New York before this new scandal came up? I was the one who said New York deserves a special election. I'll be right back, Rob. God bless you. Thanks for listening to Savage Nation. I'll be here.
Savage.
You are live with Mike Savage. You're talking about the veneer on Wall Street and the veneer in the political election and what's behind the stucco. 1-800-449-8255. Check out michaelsavage.com. I got new pictures of Teddy. I got Savage's eye camera. I'm putting up one new picture a day of my street eye, okay? And I like the pictures. Let's go to a man named Q in Los Angeles. Q, welcome to the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Dr. Savage, a pleasure to speak with you. 2 points. The first on the financial situation. I cannot believe what is going on right now and how the American people are basically being forced into picking up the pieces for a company like our economy that's built on a stack of cards. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
Listen to this. I want to read this to you. Quote, "This is going to go down as the biggest theft in all of financial history," said William Smith, portfolio manager of Smith Asset Management and a former Bear Stearns employee. He said, "The $2 a share stock price is more symbolic than anything because the alternative is nothing. I have friends over there. My friends just watch their fortunes vaporize." He said, "It's going to go down as the biggest theft in all of financial history. What more does anybody have to say other than if a kid robs a necklace off a stand, he'll go away for 3 to 5. If you rob an entire company, you become an employee of the government of the United States of America because you show your qualifications. That's how cynical the American people are of our government today. And don't blame me. Blame yourselves. It is an amazing time to be alive. The ancient Greek philosopher said that it's good to live in interesting times, so count yourself amongst the lucky. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. As I mentioned to you, I've been off the air a couple of days. I had to leave early Friday. I couldn't finish the show. Being the type of guy who denies any kind of weakness in myself, I let others define it for me. I pay no attention to it. I didn't know I was sick. I was. X-rays showed I was. It's not a big deal. I'll get over it, but I'm tired. And so this is the first day that I'm back, and I'm trying to cover a lot of ground, mainly the government bailout of Bear Stearns, which is unprecedented, and how they got away with this thievery is beyond me. Never mind who busted out Bear Stearns and who's going to make the largest fortunes. What about insider trading? I mean, how could this be going on under our eyes? They're brazen about it. And I mean, I go right to the top here, frankly, if I were in the FBI. I go right to the top. Something doesn't add up here. But that's not my job. It's not in my category. I'm only a talk show host. My job is to look and to comment. And thus far, we still live in a free society where commentary is permitted. How much longer this will go on, I don't know, because Barack Obama was the first U.S. senator to call for the firing of a talk show host who made a racially insensitive remark approximately a year ago. The first senator to call for his firing, which is interesting when you think about it, because he sat through a preacher's sermons for 20 years who made remarks that he now says he disavows, but he certainly didn't walk out of the pew. He didn't walk out of the church. He didn't find another church. He sat there for 20 straight years, but he said in talk radio, that's racially insensitive. He should be fired, you know, cut his head off in essence. There's a biblical saying, when you take away a man's millstone, it is as though you have killed him. Now, I've tried to make that point with many people who try to go after me for my political beliefs. Of course, they know that. They hide themselves behind the veneer or the guise of being liberals, but they're not liberals. They are anything but. When you take away a man's millstone, it is as though you have killed him. Now, what did the biblical writers or philosophers mean by that? What was a millstone? A millstone was a necessity in order to grind corn. Or wheat, rather, excuse me, to grind wheat. There was no corn in the Middle East. Corn is a Mesoamerican crop. In order to grind the wheat, you needed a millstone. Without a millstone, you couldn't grind the wheat. You'd starve to death. In other words, it was your trade. And if you take away a man's ability to make his living, you kill him. The Bible said if you take away a man's millstone, it is as though you have killed him. So if anyone calls for the fairness doctrine, they're trying to kill us in talk radio. If CAIR tries to kill me by boycotting my advertisers, they're trying to kill me. Make no mistake about it. It's a form of terrorism, you see. And so if Wall Street thieves bust out a fellow banker's investment bank, they have killed 14,000 employees. They have nothing left. They don't care. As I said, their maids, Gulfstream needs new engines. Max, in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, thank you for bringing yourself to the microphone. And I can't believe that it took your show and all the hours I see the financial news networks not revealing what you're revealing here in the last several minutes.
Well, what? You mean nobody's talking about the thievery of this particular bailout? They've gone on to something else?
No, of course not. In fact, they're the ones who allowed Mr. Paulson the airtime to come in front of the American people and persuade them to remain happy about the fact, for example, yesterday's rally when we went up several hundred points, supposedly the best rally, fourth best rally in 5 years. Everybody's coming out of the woodwork to buy stocks, and I really am calling my reason is to say to be very careful about what tales are being told here. If you were a distressed warehouse right now, and I've been a broker now for nearly 25 years, mm-hmm. Who's on the other side of that trade? If you want the American public to buy and take and drink the Kool-Aid, let's bring Mr. Paulson out in front of everybody and tell them how good things are while they're selling whatever they can to you in the stock market to buy. Those of us who know...
Wait, you're a broker who's saying be cautious and don't buy so fast because who are you buying it from is what you're cautioning, Max?
What I'm saying is that if you were a distressed firm and we got, and I think in the next 2 weeks, the last weekend, you probably came out of your sickness saying, I can't believe what I see, $2 a share. I say, my goodness, we're in a crisis zone right now in the next 2 weeks. And these warehouses are capital poor. They are looking right now to get rid of whatever stocks they can into the hands of the public. They're propping it up with whatever they can, and they even have Mr. Paulson out in front of the TV cameras, but not a single financial reporter is challenging them on the things that you've talked about tonight. And I think that...
Well, that's right. When I saw that Paulson give that speech in that hesitating, aw shucks, bewildered manner, I saw the biggest con of my life. It reminded me of George Bush going on and on about the Iraq War again. That I meant well, I don't know if I really did what I thought I did, but I'll stick to my guns because I know I'm right kind of speech. It's the same phony baloney garbage here. But Max, Mr. Paulson's entitled to his opinions, but he is the Treasury Secretary, and he comes from Goldman Sachs. Doesn't that raise alarm bells to you?
It is so amazing that, like you say, it's orgasms and cell phones that all that matters to the American people anymore. I watch this. And I'm amazed as you are, and I know it's what motivated you to get out of your sick bed.
It is. It did motivate me. More than the Obama thing, which was covered already last week and everyone's doing it, I myself had to express my opinion about the Bush Bear bailout, which is being called the biggest theft in American history, Max. And it was called that not by me, but by a major league broker, Max. Am I the only one who's saying this, or is this going on around Wall Street? People are they saying it, but not being heard by the great Neil Cavuto on Fox News? Is that it?
The little
Neil Cavuto. How come he hasn't covered this over there? Or one of the smart girls on CNBC? One of the cheerleaders there? One of the YouTube cheerleaders? Eventually, I won't be surprised if I see one of them in a few days. One of their high school YouTubes. How come they're not talking about it, Max?
I'm glad you're talking about it, and I call her Maria Barcelona because I can't stand watching her happy face on good days. And on bad days, who knows what? You know, they're all quiet. This is going to be one of the...
But she's a friend of all the power players, so how would you expect her to blow the lid on any of their shenanigans when she's a friend of theirs? It's all a seamless government media complex, which I've been warning about for a long time, Max.
Absolutely.
Well, call me the fool on the hill, Max, but I'm no fool, but I am on a hill. I'll be right. No, I'm still here. Thanks for the call. Here's an article on michaelsavage.com from my good friends at Canada Free Press. Says, California should celebrate March 31st as Dr. Michael Savage Day, written by John Lilpop. I think he wrote it to me as a get well present. It's three paragraphs or so. Can I read it to you, please? Do you mind if I blow my own horn? He writes this. He said, California is world renowned for goofy politics and politicians, leftist lunacy, and just plain craziness. That insanity obviously spills over to the manner by which priorities are established here in the Golden State. For example, radio superstar Dr. Michael Savage hosts a nationally syndicated radio talk show from San Francisco that is carried by about 410 stations, reaches 10 to 14 million listeners every week, and is one of the last vestiges of hope for free speech and pro-American sentiment in the media. Dr. Savage is truly an extraordinary citizen and man of distinction. Consider a partial list of his accomplishments. Holds two master's degrees and a PhD from the University of California at Berkeley. Authored 24 books. I'll repeat that, 24 books, including four New York Times bestsellers. Hugely popular talk show host in the top three. Introduced term compassionate conservative to properly describe conservatives who favor smaller, less intrusive government. Staunch defender of American sovereignty, rule of law, preservation of American borders, language, and culture. With these credentials to his credit, one would expect California to be rightfully proud of this favorite son, perhaps even set aside a day to commemorate the contributions made by this extremely talented man. Say March 31st, for instance. That particular date just happens to be the birthday of Dr. Michael Savage. Why not designate March 31 as Michael Savage Day throughout the length and breadth of our great state? Now listen to this. Close the schools, shut the state and local bureaucracies, and dedicate the entire day to celebrating the birth and life of Dr. Michael Savage, What is that you say? March 31 is already a state holiday in California to commemorate the birthday of the late Cesar Chavez. Can you imagine? A brilliant author, educator, radio broadcaster, and advocate for America is all but ignored while the entire state shuts down to remember the birthday of a great picker and union organizer. Only in California. Couldn't have written it better myself, John. As a matter of fact, I've just asked folks to contact John who I've never met because I want to take John to dinner the day I feel better. Now, I have a caller who knows. I've been waiting for a call like this because he's going to speak to you about the original J.P. Morgan, which is interesting. When I was young, I read intensely read biographies. I read every biography I can get my hands on of so-called great men. Some were great and some were plain old robber barons. There was a phrase called robber barons. I mean, there was a class of men called robber barons that once existed in America. They built the great fortunes in America, the robber barons did. Now their daughters are on YouTube seeking orgasms and new cell phones, their granddaughters or great-granddaughters, dissipating the family fortunes, flying around the globe looking for another thrill, a thrill a second, apparently from nightclub to nightclub. It's astonishing what's happened to the West. If I were not given towards sanity, I'd probably leave America altogether and go disappear in a cave in Lahore. But the fact of the matter is, there were robber barons, and Wall Street is very much still connected to robber barons. They're here today, but they're not called robber barons today. They may be called something else, corporate titans, treasury secretaries, fly fishermen. They have different names today. They all have public relations agents. In the old days, they didn't need public relations agents. They were proud of being pirates and robber barons. Chicago, Illinois, Joe, welcome to the Savage Nation. You want to talk about the original J.P. Morgan, don't you?
Yes, Dr. Savage. It's great to be with you. What I wanted to say is that it's come to my attention that J.P. Morgan himself was directly responsible or co-conspirator in the 1907 bank panic because he was tied to the Federal Reserve and the powers that be because they wanted to further instill a permanent place as the sole guarantor of, or offerer of government funds.
Well, where does that leave us today? J.P. Morgan was just given a handout in the form of the Bear building and the Bear assets for $2 a share. For $250 million, they bought it $2 on $170 stock. It was $2 when they were given it by the government. So who would J.P. Morgan benefited is the question, Joe. Well, who's the robber baron there?
The government itself.
Well, this is like not a short answer question. It's a long answer essay question for your final exam. It's your midterm. Sorry, it's March. Before spring break, folks, you have a spring break assignment from Dr. Savage. In fact, I want you to write this over your spring break, which is this. It's an essay question. It is not a short answer question. Who are the robber barons of today? And there will be extra credit if you put it in the context of historical analysis, meaning going back to J.P. Morgan, the original Rockefeller, and the other fine folks upon who laid the foundations for the United States of America banking system, the original grand thieves, you know, Grand Theft Auto. So there it is. And, you know, criminality is defined very interestingly. We all can agree that certain crimes are so horrible that they're really crimes. Do I have to mention what they are? Rape. I've always said that genuine rape should be punished by castration. Genuine rape, not the false rape created by the women's movement, so-called date rape. Real rape is one of the worst acts that could be visited upon a woman, frankly, upon a man as well. And genuine rape should be punished by castration. So there are crimes that we can say we all agree are really crimes. Taking bread out of a poor man's hands. You don't have to go down the list. We all know what a crime is. We all know what thievery is. But at a certain level, it requires a certain skill to get away with crime, which you can then, by using a certain kind of golden floss that is related to dental floss, you can get up with an aw shucks, begosh, old boy country club demeanor and virtually get away with theft on such a grand scale that it's considered benevolence. That's called government. I'll be right back.
Savage.
supportive of Bill Clinton when he was doing that. I told you about him. Just like I'm speaking about this long-legged freak called Obama, I told you about Bill Clinton, a man that has built your home the way this home is, and now you are trashing him and his wife after he's given you all of what he's given to you from a man you have no idea what he's going to do, and the reason why you're doing it is not because of honor and integrity, but simply because he got a black face, but I told you he also got a white mama. You hypocrite, you. You spineless, you know what, Obama as your president. You're despicable. No honor. No integrity. Well, I'm not in favor of Bill Clinton, but if a man has done for you as much as he has done, and then for you to trash him the way you're trashing him makes you less than a maggot.
Reverend James David Manning speaking out about Barack Hussein Obama in, I would say, a controversial manner. Now, I want to requote Booker T. Washington, a truly great American. This was written in 1911. He founded Tuskegee University, and this is from his book, My Larger Education. And this is dedicated to Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, in my opinion. I think he had them in mind when he wrote this, Booker T. Washington. He was African American, and he said, "There is another class of colored people who make a business of keeping the troubles, the wrongs, and the hardships of the Negro race before the public. Having learned that they are able to make a living out of their troubles, they have grown into the settled habit of advertising their wrongs, partly because they want sympathy and partly because it pays. Some of these people do not want the Negro to lose his grievances because they do not want to lose their jobs." He's talking about white race hustlers as well, by the way. That's the whole Democrat Party structure built upon that. It's up on michaelsavage.com as a running head, and you should get it up there. You know, I had a search to find this again. Although Booker T. Washington is a genuinely great American for the things he's done. I mean, he founded a university. He's written some wonderful things. He's virtually unknown in the African-American community because of what I just read to you, because he didn't like to play up the wrongs that were done to blacks. He didn't like to play up the past. He didn't like to play up the hardships. And because of that, because he said, let's look beyond that and let's go forward already. Remember, this was in 1911. The Civil War ended 45, 50 years before that, didn't it? 40 years, 50 years before that? Half a century already had seen the same thing going on that we're seeing 100 years later. Here we are almost 100 years since 1911. You hear this? And the same operational premises are still at play. You've got white people who are using black people to make a living, fomenting hatred amongst black people instead of helping black people, just fomenting hatred amongst black people. And you say, well, how did this all come up that we're even talking about it all over again? There was no race in this race. Well, now there's race in the race. Thanks to Obama, there's race in the race. The man who said there should be no divisiveness has given us the great divisiveness. The very divisiveness he said we shouldn't have, he's given us. Why? Because underneath that veneer, underneath that vanilla veneer, there was something else. And as the stucco has come off the facade, we're seeing some rotten wood. We're seeing some rotten wood that needs replacement, something that a real good contractor can understand. I mean, you have to really go in there and sister some of those beams, honey. That's all I can tell you. Some of those beams are so bad that you got to go all the way back in that ship and cut them out to the heartwood and sister those beams in order to keep that ship afloat. That's once the facade was scraped away. Once the veneer was peeled away, we see something else. He brought it up, not me. Don't blame me if you don't mind. The reason race is in this race is because it was there all along, only he was very slick at covering it up. Now we got McCain over there bumbling along in the Middle East at the Wailing Wall with the yarmulke. Always, to me, always a comedic sight. I don't know why. Not the yarmulke, don't get me wrong. Don't misquote me. But when Bush puts on the yarmulke and McCain puts on the yarmulke, I'm a cynical guy. I can't help it. To me, it's the equivalent of kissing babies. To me, it's kissing babies. You know, I'd rather he didn't go over there and put the yarmulke on in front of the Wailing Wall. I'd rather he took the handcuffs off David and let him unleash the airplanes on the murderers and wipe them out once and for all. Unleash the Israeli Air Force and take out the enemy before there's no Jew left in the Middle East from those genocidal bastards.
Now, you could call me a fool on the Hill if you wish. But I ain't no fool, even though I'm on a hill. I've come out of a sickbed to tell you as I see it. I've told you how I've seen it. Take it for what it is.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. You'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage, that's if a check, a money order, cash. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. And God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech.
Savage.
I live in the most superficial city in America. Instead of being concerned with the real issues, there's page upon page about Maitre D's with Moxie. That's a featured story on Maitre D's with Moxie. In other words, to them, a cultural hero is someone who takes you to a table and carries a menu. They're braver than the U.S. Marines to the morons who run the newspaper. I have nothing against Maitre D's, by the way, but you don't feature them like they're better than any, they're like culture heroes already to the morons in this superficial slag heap called San Francisco social scene. So then the great moments from the front of the house saving the day in the San Francisco Comical. Maitre D's with Moxie. The scene, they name a restaurant I never heard of. The Maitre D's, someone I never heard of. The problem. A party of 14 was in the wine cellar for a private party. One of the guests who drank too much during the multi-course dinner passed out, hitting his head and losing his dinner all over the floor. Instead of saying puking on the floor, losing his dinner? What was it, in his pocket? Who wrote this garbage? What, they're too politically correct to say puke? The solution, another person in the party took the man to the hospital. The maitre d' moved the rest of the group upstairs for coffee and then went downstairs and cleaned up the mess himself. Now, here comes the heroism. It's not all glamour to be a maitre d', says the maitre d'. Sometimes you have to roll up your sleeves and do it because the restaurant is your home. The party host, terribly embarrassed, tip big, and still come back as regulars. Woo, what a story. This is real Pulitzer material. Then they have a little article for the would-be social climbers who can't afford to go to a restaurant. How to be maitre d' at your own dinner party. You hear this one? This is a scream. This is just a scream. My idea of being a maitre d' at my own dinner party is to reheat something and watch the news and see what's going on in the world. Let's see what they advise in the social newspaper. God, I feel like it's 1870.
Well, we have an opera house that competes with some of your best back east. We have quite an opera house out here now.
So out of town, man.
Hospitality is an art, so practice it the next time you have a dinner party, they advise. These tips from the Bay Area's best maitre will make your guests feel comfortable.
What am I, their servant? What do you mean make your guests feel comfortable? I'm not out to please them. Come and let them sing for their supper. What do you mean make your guests feel comfortable?
To be a good maitre d', throw out the notion that someone is right and someone is wrong. See, non-judgmentalism, even with regard to this. Your guests are right, period. No arguments. No power struggles. Your job as host is to figure out how to make them happy. Let me look at some of the advice.
Who writes this trash?
Decide what kind of experience you want your guests to have ahead of time. And think about how to provide that. Do you want them to be pampered the whole night?
What, do the morons have nothing to do but throw dinner parties for non-entities? I mean, if you have enough money to throw a dinner party, you have a professional do it. So you don't have to do it. If you don't have enough money, what are you putting on air? It's like you have enough money to throw a dinner party. Create the ambience. Light candles. Ooh, that's hot. Hey, candles are really cool. Arrange some cozy seating clusters. I can't even read this. This is like Crank Yankers. Light candles. Arrange some cozy seating clusters. This is like light candles, arrange some cozy seating clusters, and set out napkins. Wow, man, that's really sophisticated. You put out napkins for your guests. That's really hot. Or other items guests might need while they nibble snack. Well, that's a real good tip. Don't think they'll wipe their fingers on your upholstery otherwise. Have the dinner table set and ready. That's a good tip. Your house should be tidy. No kidding. This is unbelievable. What's next? Gay greeter for the straight eater? That's the San Francisco newspaper's next idea of a newspaper article. Gay greeters for the straight eater. So you have to do it with Elan. The gay way to dining success. Your house should be tidy but look a little lived in. So that when you open the door, people immediately feel comfortable. Welcome your guests as if they were family. Oh, boy. Now, here's the next one. Here they get tough now. Be in charge. Okay. Be specific. Big part of service is helping people make decisions. Oh, in other words, I'm supposed to be a servant to a bunch of people. Okay. Prepare a special treat. If you know guests like a particular kind of wine or a special dish, have it on hand. Then say something like this. I know you like my panna cotta, so I made some just for you. Do you know what panna cotta is, or latte? If you don't know what those words are, you're considered like out of it. You don't know what a panna cotta is. Panna cotta is a piece of bread that's like as hard as a brick that they reheated for you. It's like terracotta made of wheat. Be sensitive to the flow of the party, they advise. If guests gather in the kitchen before dinner, even though you preferred them in the living room, that's assuming you have a living room and a kitchen. I mean, whoever would read this probably doesn't have both a kitchen and a living room. It's probably one room. Let it go and find a way to make people comfortable while you finish cooking. You hear? What kind of dinner party could you have? They're all in the kitchen. Watch for the wallflower, relax. Imagine how you would want to feel and treat your guests exactly that way. A KS wrote it. Oh, my God.
Savage.
Now, Fat Al's tuna, that's a recipe. When I was a boy working as a busboy in the Shanks Paramount Hotel, I saw how tuna was really made. Fat Al was a 350-pounder. Now, when he made tuna in a tureen, he didn't use a mixed mass. They used his hairy forearm. He had his cigarette dangling from the right side of his mouth, and the kitchen was banging and bustling, and the people were out there eating a ninth meal of the afternoon. And he was mixing a tuna. He would throw the cans of tuna in. They'd throw in vats of mayonnaise. And the guy stirred it with his arm. He rolled up his undershirt. You see, you got to visualize this. Fat Al would lean over that tureen with the arm, the big, giant Italian arm, full of hair. And his arm was mayonnaise thick up to his armpit. And he's got the arm moving around. And he said, you see, kid, you keep moving it till you get a nice, creamy consistency. Meanwhile, the ash is falling off his cigarette. I guess that helped the taste of the tuna because the people never complained. They loved it. Now, that's a tuna. There is a proper tuna with a little sweat and arm hair. Now, that is a good tuna fish recipe. Other than that, I don't want to talk about recipes. Here's a story on the two faces of England that caught my eye. It said, Englishmen quayed up to denounce their country as being sick and depraved in an article in Der Spiegel. According to the German magazine, our island story is now filled with brawling drunks, overflowing prisons, truancy, late trains and racists, and our only heroes are philandering footballers. We have become a nation ill at ease with ourselves. It sounds like America. Now filled with brawling drunks, overflowing prisons, truancy, late trains and racists. And the only thing missing from that list are phony liberals. Our only heroes are philandering footballers, so we could substitute philandering basketball players. We have become a nation ill at ease with ourselves. Yet in the same week, a new guidebook paints Britain as an idyllic country where everything stops for afternoon tea, complete with cucumber sandwiches and crumpets, delicious fruitcakes and jam sponges. Everyone wears tweed in the country, and the trains generally run on time. The only problem with the English is they can't speak the language properly. That's the one problem with them. They never, like, kept up with the times. They speak a kind of a brittle, older language that's not really – doesn't really resemble the English that I know. And it doesn't work for them anymore. That's why they're shriveling as a nation. Can you name one British talk show host that sells in the world? No. People don't like that. That British accent was hot in the 60s. Everyone hired like a chick who had a British accent, like, because all the Jewish guys in the garment center got hot for that. You know what I mean? Yes, Mr. Katz is not here. They always hired him in the garment center. That's who they hired. But that's over with. No one won. Now they want like a Puerto Rican woman or Mexican. That's like, in a certain way, it's reverse de classe. If you got someone who speaks that kind of parochial English, it's more appealing in a certain way, very in your face. No one wants that English thing. That's over. In the 60s, yes. Right through the late 50s, early 60s, the Twiggy, the Beatles, the Aston Martin, the whole thing was very cool. But then the English thing died with the breakdown of the nation with immigration, with the breakdown of because of the asylum and the liberalism and the whole thing. England is no more. I mean, they're just not what they were. So it's fine if you like it. I'm not knocking it. But the English accent does not play the same way that I enjoy listening to it. It's kind of archaic and cute in its own way. But it's not used in the same – how many people do you call up today in business and get that English girl accent? No one. No one anymore. I'm not putting it down. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying that no one is into the English accent thing as cool. In fact, it has a reverse effect on people. I never forget when I was in graduate school, I had a professor I really admired a lot. Now, he was an American, PhD, a really fine chemist. He was the chairman of the pharmacology department, and I was doing graduate studies under him, and I loved this guy. He'd come from a major American pharmaceutical firm and retired to teach pharmacology, and I really admired this guy, okay? Now, he's not a New Yorker, but he spoke a regular Midwestern New York accent. I'll never forget, I was thinking of this just the other day while shaving. An English professor had come to meet him and talk about something, and the Englishman walked in and said something like, "Daryl Devonshire here," and he said, "I'm Frank, how are you?" In other words, he didn't get intimidated by the Derby Devonshire thing, nor did Derby Devonshire necessarily do it to rank him out. He may have. But the point I'm making is that by answering in his own accent, he was he, and the other guy was he. You know what I'm saying? He was he. So learn to be who you are. Don't try to change yourself. Believe me, I could speak corporatese as good as the next guy. I was a corporate consultant for many years. And I found out as time went on, I don't have to sound like I'm from the Midwest in order for people to understand me. They're listening to my ideas, and they will listen to the New York accent just as well. As a matter of fact, it's kind of engaging for many Americans because it is so unusual for them to hear an authentic New York accent in an age where everybody's been corporatized into some sanitized, homogenized, martinized American.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Carl, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Good evening, Michael. My comment is this. I think that Hollywood has really lost its focus. 60 years ago when Ronald Reagan was running around in the Screen Actors Guild, there was a commitment by Ronald and those who shared his ideology to fight communism. Their thought was, let's do it through the wonderful Hollywood media machine that we have.
Right.
That's long gone. They fought tooth and nail against the people, the subversives, the liberal losers in that industry. Very, very...
And now the entire industry, 99%, is taken over by the radical left, who are attacking our government, attacking the president, not attacking Islamofascism, not showing us the real threats of Islamofascism, never showing the hundreds of thousands of marchers and goose steps with AK-47s with black masks, instead hating George Bush and Republicans more than they do the Islamofascist movement.
We get garbage movie like the Sleep Around Warren Beatty in Reds and every other sort of crap movie that portrays...
Why is it that so many celebrities who come up from their drug and alcohol-induced orgies, they swim up to reality for a few minutes a day, and all they can think of doing is attacking America and attacking the president? What is it about them? Angelica Houston is going to release a letter signed by 100 stupid celebrities who want President Bush to stop talking about Iraq. Signed by stars, including Kim Basinger. When was she last in a movie? Matt Damon. Lawrence Fishburne. When was he last in a winning movie? It's always the losers. This is what I'm trying to tell you, is that most of the radical left in Hollywood consists of those whose careers are on the rocks. Most, not all, most. Most of them are passé. You know that? Do you agree with me on that, Carl?
Yeah, I'd say mostly. I'd say, too, that, though, if Angelica Houston persuades Barbara Streisand, though, to sign that letter, look for her signature, Michael. It'll be the only one there that's just a big X.
Yeah, but that's why they call it fun. That's why they call her Funny Girl. There's something funny upstairs. Okay, look, I made my point. Hollywood, instead of putting out propaganda movies encouraging America to fight this tide of fascism, by any other name, it's fascist. It is Hitler all over again in a headscarf. It's Hitler in a headscarf. Hitler in a headscarf. Hitler is back. He's not marching with an oompa-pa band. He doesn't have a swastika. He has a headscarf! Morons! Morons, you're insane. You are insane. I don't care how rich you are. I don't care how famous you are. Knows. You're morons. You're sick. You're mentally ill. All of you. I don't care how many limos you step out of. I don't care how many flashlights go off. I don't know how many Klieg lights you stood under. You're morons, and you are insane. Turn the TV on at night. There it is. 100,000, 200,000 goose steppers with AK-47s. Kill the Jews! 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 Kill the Christian! Kill the Christian! Kill the Christian! Kill the Jews! Kill the Jews! And there's Angelica Houston. There is Barbara Streisand. There's the others attacking President Bush. They have more hatred for Republicans than they do for Islamofascism. They have more hatred for President Bush than they do for Osama bin Laden. So, ladies and gentlemen, I rest my case. Red diaper doper babies, RDDBs. The Hollywood left, the liberal left in journalism like this Peter Arnett, who goes over there and tries to make us look bad just before, on the eve of war, they will kill us. They will be responsible, if anyone, for the death of this country. They will kill us. This is no longer free speech. This is sedition. They are endangering your sons and daughters who are going over there. They are weakening their resolve. They are weakening their resolve. They are emboldening the enemy. If that's not a sedition, I'd like to know what is. I know what the word means. I know very well what the word means. Do you?
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Tucson, Arizona. TJ, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. I'm responding to the comments Sally Fields made about if women were ruling things, this world would be better and there wouldn't be any wars. My contention that if women were ruling things, this world would be far worse than what it is. And I cite the examples is the dating habits of women. There are a lot of men joining the Bloods and the Crips to get girls. A lot of times if I've been picked on or harassed or whatever by men, it was because they were trying to get the sexual favors of other women. It was a woman.
You're saying that men fight with each other because of women to show that they're more dominant?
And I'm also saying that because women are responsive to that, by virtue of that, they encourage violence in men.
Some women do. I would say that is true. There's actually a biological, you know, imperative in the sense that the women want the most viable male to produce offspring with. She wants usually a man who can defend her and who is, more liable to produce a strong child. When it gets carried to the extreme of killing over a woman, of course, I think that's another story. But by a lot, look, let's look at the animal kingdom in order to draw some conclusions, TJ. The moose who will bang heads in order to attract the female. Wherever you look, you're going to see male animals fighting with each other in order to get the female. Isn't that true? Look at the lions. They'll chase, the old male will be chased away eventually by a younger lion. He is then shunned from the tribe. He's no longer considered a viable mate for the women. The girl lions, the female lions, rather, they want the most viable male. And in our society, the women tend to want a nerdy guy today rather than the macho guy. The smart women do, because they know the nerdy guy will make more money and probably is smart enough to avoid getting killed.
Uh-huh. Well, see, you're making the point that in order to impress a woman, you have to behave like an animal.
I mean, you got me there, TJ. And by the way, I'm not going to argue with you.
It was a woman who wanted the head of John the Baptist on a silver platter.
TJ, you set me up pretty good on that one. I got to thank you for it. I don't know any examples in history of benevolent women leaders, do you? I mean, which women leaders come to mind as let's say there'd be no wars if there were women leaders? Who are they thinking about? Let's say there was a woman leader of Pakistan. Remember Bhutto? Her father had been assassinated. Then she became a leader of Pakistan. I mean, wherever you look. Okay, Golda Meir, she was far more macho and had more of you-know-what, more testosterone than Shimon Peres. How about Margaret Thatcher? I mean, I admire those women, but they weren't peaceniks. None of them were.
But sometimes you need to have war. Sometimes if you avoid a war, it causes a war. I mean, for example...
Absolutely, and sometimes it's better to have a war early on before your enemy becomes too strong and you're going to... Let's, for example, Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. Right now he's a pipsqueak. He can be wiped out overnight. He has no military to speak of. He is, though, in cahoots with Ahmadinejad. He's trying to get nuclear weapons. He's buying submarines. This guy, if he is not stopped, will wind up causing a bigger war, and there'll be more Americans and Venezuelans dying 5 years from now or 10 years from now than they would die right now. So an argument can be made that he should be stopped before he gets bigger. I think that's what you're saying, isn't it?
Well, go back to World War II. Had William Chamberlain had not been appeasing Hitler, and had we just taken him out from the beginning? As a matter of fact, I heard a story that the orders were cut to arrest Hitler for violating the previous treaties from World War I.
Yes,
and,
you're 100% right. If Hitler had been stopped at Munich, World War II could have been aborted. Tens of millions of people wouldn't have died. It's the same with Ahmadinejad coming to New York. Why should a new Hitler, which is who Ahmadinejad is spiritually, intellectually, in every way, he's saying the same things Hitler did. He wants the nuclear weapons so he can terrorize the world and kill people. He does not want it for peaceful reasons. If that man was stopped now, we could avoid a larger war, which is why, thank God, George Bush is showing all the signs of doing the right thing, and so is France. I hope they do. I hope they do go ahead with it. I don't know where you stand on that one. Do you think we should go and take out Iranian military targets?
Oh, definitely. I think we should have done that when we went in with Iraq at the same time. Oh, getting back to women, though, there's a belief system that women mature faster than men, and I don't believe that. I believe women just at an earlier age desire to have a mate. That does not necessarily equate with the fact that women are mature, because all you have to do is look at how they behave in divorce courts.
You know, you're the best misogynist I've had on in years, TJ. You really sound jaundiced. What happened to you?
Well, first of all, some of the most cruelest things have either been done to me either by women or by men who were trying to impress women, and I've made those observations very young in life. I wasn't even a teenager by that point, and I don't worship women.
I'm not going to argue with you. You're not the only man on earth who feels a little intimidated by the gentle sex. All I know is this. When the year of the woman came along in Congress around 92, 93, 94, do you remember the speeches we heard? That when women were elected, we'd have a more gentler Congress, et cetera. Now, I ask you, when you look at Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein, Barbara Mikulski, do you feel that we have a gentler, kinder Congress?
We have a cattier Congress.
Well, let's look at Dianne Feinstein and her husband, Richard Blum. Would you say that we have a more honest Senate with Dianne Feinstein as a U.S. Senator?
No,
do you think that if a man did what Dianne Feinstein allegedly is doing in terms of steering contracts from committees that she sat on, defense contracts to her, let's say it was a man sitting on a defense committee and he steers contracts to his wife's consulting firm and she's worth hundreds of billions of dollars, do you think that man would have stayed in office as long as Dianne Feinstein has?
Yes, sir, as long as he was a catty, effeminized, liberal man. Yes, sir.
You got me there again. You have a pretty good sense of humor, TJ. How do you survive in Tucson, Arizona? Are you calling from penitentiary?
In a way, yes, sir.
Uh-oh. I didn't mean to you are incarcerated because I did invite people from prisons to call last week. No, are you actually calling from? You're not in a lock. You're in a mental hospital or a prison?
No, I meant that more figuratively, not literally.
I know you did. I was just kidding. But you have any relationships with women at all? Mother, sister, children, daughters? No.
Right now, I'm trying to get over a sports injury, so I'm staying away from the dating scene. But to be honest with you, it was my sister who re-injured my sporting injury.
So you're saying you were in a cast and she came in and twisted your ankle?
More specifically, I have torn cartilage in my back, and she took me on this Bag Mountain dirt road with a bunch of potholes on it, and I told her that I had a physician's order to stay off of pothole-ridden roads. She lied to me, and her husband drove like about 50 miles an hour over the potholes, and so I have an MRI report that shows that my disc was healing.
Oh, my God. This is a really serious story here. So you're a little leery of women to begin with. Now, on top of it all, your own blood turns out to be untrustworthy when it comes to this.
Let me tell you the story. Whenever I'm in bars and I'm meeting women, they're telling me about how rotten the ex-boyfriends were and abusive. I ask them, what's he doing? And when they kind of shrug their shoulders and say, I don't know, I'll tell them straight up, well, if you can't even tell me what the problem is and what he's doing, how do I know that you're not the one that's instigating the bad behaviors? And, you know, a lot of women are actually turned on by that. You know, I've never had a drink thrown in my face. But the bottom line is you can go in bars all over the country with a bunch of women who are berating their exes. And every man knows that they're lying and whatever it is they did that to provoke that the problem is being left out of the story. But still, men will, yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course. So, you know, you have to go, stare them in the eye, too, and buy them another drink.
See, nobody tells women the truth that when they're wrong, and so what you have is a whole society of women who really don't have a good fix.
Yeah, well, you want to get a heart attack? Tell a woman when she's wrong. Have you met a woman yet who will admit she's wrong in your whole life?
I've met some women where you could get away with it more than other women, and
I'm amazed. There are some brilliant, intelligent women out there who can never admit they're wrong, though. There's something about the feline nature of a woman that it's very hard for them to say they were wrong. I don't get that. I don't understand that part of it. If I'm wrong, I admit I'm wrong. It's not easy for me, but I'll have to admit it in order to go forward myself. Okay, you're an honest guy. I want to ask you something. You heard the story I read today from the website. Federal prosecutor arrested in child sex thing. He was trying to have sex with a 5-year-old girl. What do you think of a story like this? What's your reaction to that?
Well, my reaction to that is the death penalty for people who do things like that. One appeal, and that'll get rid of those kinds of problems.
But could you believe this man works for the U.S. Justice Department as an assistant U.S. attorney in Florida?
Yes, sir, I can. I mean, just look at the activities of the ACLU and what our criminal judicial system is letting them get away with.
You're good. TJ, you should head up the Savage Nation in Tucson. You're like a one-man Savage Nation in Tucson.
I could probably do it for maybe 15 minutes. And
you wouldn't have patience, I know. Well, let me send you a gift. I got to send you a gift. You pick it. You want the CD? You want the Healing Children Naturally? You want the Alzheimer's book? Anything else I can send you from the cornucopia of Savage Items?
The CD would be great.
TJ, stay on the line. We're going to get you the Michael Savage DVD Freedom of Speech Award by Talkers Mag. You'll see me gesticulating wildly with my New Yorker hands. Teddy does make a little doggy appearance. He's not a SAG employee, so I got him for cheap. I got him for not even a bone out of that one. I got him for a cup of water and a pat on the head.
Savage.
Life goes on. Every day I read the obituaries. This one died at 48. That one stood up and had embolism and dropped dead at 51. The next day you read another one, a woman, got a head, rose to the top of the MGM studio. Next thing, breast cancer, then dead in 2 months. So, when you reach the point in life where you start reading the obituaries, you know you're in trouble. I've been reading them for 30 years. I love obituaries. They're all leftists. They never write an obituary of any centrist or conservative. I know they won't cover me when I die. You know, a PhD, 2 master's degrees, saved many rainforests, rescued folklore, wrote 20 books, pioneer in this, 2 best-selling books, famous radio host, won't even mention me. I don't fit the agenda. But if they get a communist lawyer in New York who you forgot about in 1940, he was already forgotten. They dig people up. Morton Pepperblatt. I'm making up a name. Every names, you don't even know why they're in there. Morton Pepperblatt, famous in the 1940s for rescuing workers from the oppressive labor union of the Firemen's Guild. And he leaves behind, a cat and a dog. Well, that's the way it is. It's their newspaper. He can do what he wants with it.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Savage. Here's a big...
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
If you look at the Middle East, you can take the pictures and you can distort them in any way you want. You can make Israel into the aggressor. You can make the underdog Israel into the overdog. And the media is doing it. What's amazing to me, and we have the montage here, is that the media is actually taking the side of Hezbollah, even though the Arab League and even though the Saudi Arabians, even though the Egyptians, even though the Jordanians have taken the side of Israel, saying to Hezbollah, you started this, now finish it. Even though this terrorist group is hated by every civilized person on the planet, the scum in the media in America has taken the side of Hezbollah. What more do you need to know that you already don't know about them? You may say, why did they do this? I have said liberalism is a mental disorder. Maybe that's one explanation. All the years of marijuana could explain it. I really don't know why they would support people who would slash their throat like a sheep going, bah. So I'm going to get into the Middle East in a moment. But I want to show you that numbers don't lie. Matt Drudge does lie with numbers. So let's start with the heat wave. Many of you will think, wow, it must be global warming, man. The kids are using fire pumps in the streets, the hot streets. When I was a kid in the Bronx, we opened up the fire hydrants because it was so hot. Now, that's not factually interesting. It's just an interesting anecdote. So let's look at the facts. Here are the facts. I looked up the record highest temperatures by state and by date, and it proves that Al Gore lies and global warming is a lie. Okay, for example, I'll go by state for you. Alabama, the highest temperature on record, 1925, 112 degrees. Alaska, 1915, 100 degrees. This is before really cars were in Alaska, like 1915. What could there have been a few hundred cars there? 1936 was a very hot year. Arkansas, 120 degrees. California, what was the hottest year in California? Why, it was 1913, long before the Model T Ford. 134 degrees in California, in Greenland Ranch, California. 134 degrees, but what is the important date? 1913. So let's go to Colorado. Is it global warming? What's the highest temperature on record? 118 degrees. When did it occur? Yesterday? No. 1888. Before automobiles were on the roads in Colorado, it was 118 degrees in 1888. Now, I'm a man who's trained in science with a PhD from a real great university. So to me, I like to do my research. And I'm going to get to showing you with this how they distort everything. 1888, Colorado, 118 degrees, and so on. 1930, Washington, D.C., it was 106 degrees. 1931 in Hawaii, the record, 100 degrees in Hawaii, 1931. 1934, Idaho. Remember Drudge tried to tell you that North Dakota had broken all records? Well, that's Drudge for you, a high school dropout. What does he know about anything? He's a web guy who makes stuff up, apparently. And he's a company girl for WABC, so he lies, tries to distort the numbers, because he's part of the cabal that hates Michael Savage. So let's look at North Dakota. Highest record on temperature, Matt Boy, 1936, Matty Boy, 121 degrees. 1936, Boy Chick, 121 degrees. 1898, Oregon, 119 degrees. I know you want to talk about Islamofascism, and I will, but this is very important. 1898 was the record high temperature for Oregon, 119 degrees, long before Al Gore's great-grandfather was Randy on the ranch. 1936, South Dakota, 120 degrees. 1895, Mormon country, Utah, 1895, 117 degrees. Have you learned anything from this yet, boys and girls? The year 1900, the record's broken, Wyoming, 114 degrees. Those are the temperatures in the United States by state, the highest temperatures on record. So before you start talking about, wow, it must be global warming, you better look up the facts. Now let's move to the next set of facts, since I am a man who believes in data. The radio ratings have just come in. And what's important is the truth. In the 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. slot where I am broadcast live on WOR in New York, in the audience, the largest audience of people 12 and above, I'm number one. That's WOR number one, WABC number two, WCBS number three, WFAN number four, WINS, grew up with that, number five, WFNY number six, WLIB number seven. That's a ranker for the 6 to 9 p.m. numbers, the actual ratings, not distorted by a high school dropout who has a big website. And that's all you need to know. Michael Savage is, in fact, the king of New York City radio, and I don't need anybody else to tell you about it because my audience is enough. Now let's move to the Middle East. We've got war reportage from the Middle East that is being distorted the same way radio numbers are being distorted, the same way temperatures are being distorted, as you will hear in the following montage. Listen.
Just an update on what you believe the situation is in the Middle East right now. Has Israel overreacted, as some have said?
Actually, yes. The feeling in the Middle East, Israel is overreacting, and it does enjoy the support of the United States.
A lot of people are wondering and emailing us and saying, why is Israel holding the Lebanese government responsible for something that they may not be responsible for and likely aren't?
There is growing support for Hezbollah, especially for Hassan Nasrallah. He is emerging as a leading voice for a large amount of disenfranchised people who feel that this just highlights an ongoing struggle that has happened within this region.
Collective punishment against all of Lebanon and Palestine.
It's somewhat surprising that after a week of being pounded by the Israelis, the Katyusha fire continues unabated.
Israeli warplanes pounded more targets in and around Beirut today, bringing the death toll in Lebanon to at least 183.
We witnessed for many hours this morning, and we've heard for many hours throughout the rest of today and tonight, fierce barrages of artillery fire directed at what they say is trying to neutralize the Hezbollah capability.
Yes, yes. Christian Amanpour, a man really needs to pour a big one when he takes a look at her, obviously, and that is, of course, why water carrier for Madeleine Albright, Jamie, whatever his name was, married her. Obviously, he needs a big pouring after he looks at her. I mean, but she's not alone anymore. The entire cabal in the media is turning against Israel and taking the side of this terrorist group, Hezbollah. They want the throat cutters to win.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Savage.